Well, again, everybody, welcome back to the Trick Podcast of Joey and Ghost of TV on this beautiful Saturday, July 13th, 2019. Welcome back to my show. Welcome back to my channel. Talking today about how to be yourself. How to be yourself. You know how people always tell you, be yourself, be yourself. Well, that's maybe one of the hardest things for me to hear, because I often don't know who I am. What does it mean to be yourself if you don't know who you really are? And here's what I mean. When you are a personality type like me, and perhaps like you, we're creatives, we're people pleasers, we are humanitarians, people that want to change the world and serve others, you tend to adopt the needs and the personalities of others. So let me give you an example. Well, let me first say, before the example, what I've learned or what I'm learning. I'm learning that that's not a very good thing. That the right thing to do is to be true to yourself, like what people tell you all the time. And I'm going to give you some hints on how to actually be yourself and why we tend not to be ourselves and how to overcome that. So back to the example. So I was maybe 25, maybe a little older, maybe I was almost 30, because we already had our first girl, Canela. She was maybe one or two. So yeah, I may have been even 33, 34. So I was an adult, married, in love, beautiful children, beautiful family. And up until that time, I had never driven a van. You know, those passenger vans, 12 passenger vans. And as a pastor and as a man, I mean, it was sort of embarrassing that I had never done that. Well, we went on this missions trip back to Nicaragua, back home, and we were going to the store to buy some supplies for this project that we were doing. And as the leader and as the pastor of the group, everyone got into the van and expected me to drive the van. Well, I had never driven the van. And not only that, but we were in a foreign country. Yes, of course, it's my hometown, but I didn't grow up there, so I didn't even know the rules or the laws. I knew that people drove like crazy, which panicked me. And so, long story short, I got in the van, and I almost got into two or three accidents, and I felt so horrible because I was responsible. Thank God nothing happened. But I remember especially this one moment when I went into a one-way street and I went in the wrong way. And everyone started to yell, not people in the van, but people on the streets began to call me idiot and stupid and all these horrible names. And I literally began to sweat so much because I felt so embarrassed. And here's my point. I am not one that knows a lot about driving in traffic. I don't have a lot of experience in going to different towns. I'm not a risk taker. I am someone that's just, I like to do two or three things really well. But in that moment, I had to be strong. And instead of me being true to myself, I was something that I wasn't. I try to be strong, and it only made it worse. I think to this day, I'm afraid of vans. Okay, so that may be a silly example, but let me give you something more. I may be equally as silly. So also years ago, there was a possum in my backyard. And so my beautiful wife grew up with a dad who was a very strong and practical man. Still to this day, he's in his 70s and he is a workhorse just like my wife. And so when this possum, I think the possum was dead or dying or sleeping or faking it, you know, whatever, right? The possum was in the garage. And so when my wife, we may have been even recently newly married, when she hears this noise in the garage, she immediately turns to me and said, David, go get the possum, like my dad, right? In her mind, she's thinking, well, that's another thing that I don't do. It scares me to death. I grew up with cockroaches in my hometown. I grew up with mice climbing all over me. So I am scared to death. I mean, it's like I get panicked when it comes to animals, meaning, you know, rodents and these kinds of things. And so I tried and I was sweating profusely. I was getting nowhere. By the grace of God, I had a friend here who was like a kid. He was maybe 15. And his dad was more of that kind of hero. And in terms of those things, right, more of a practical kind of He-Man, Conan. And so this young man, 16, he got, I think, a broom and went looking for this possum and got it out of the garage. And I actually didn't feel embarrassed at all. I felt so glad that he was there because he was my keyboard player. And so he was here practicing. We were doing some songs and it worked out great. My wife was happy. I was relieved. And the possum was on its way. Now, why does all of that matter? Why am I saying all this? Well, because I think that many times we as creatives, we aren't very good with practical things. Have you noticed? We're not very good with things such as fixing a leaky toilet or getting the possum out of the garage or driving a van full of kids through this busy street. There are some practical things that you would think would be easy, right? Especially if you're a man, but man or woman, you would think, oh, of course she's got this or he's got this. But they become very stressful, anxious producing, almost like a panic attack in the making. And they are just not easy for us. I know they're not easy for me. Now, why is this important? It's important because there are other things that we as creatives and empaths are amazing at. Loving people, creating, connecting, seeing people for who they really are. All of these beautiful things that are so valuable in the world, but because our world is made for doers, not for creatives. Because our world is all about traffic and rodents and things breaking. The people that are the most comfortable in this physical world are those who like to fix things, who like to or and are gifted and are naturally drawn to doing things the right way, men or women. Let me give you one more silly example that just happened last night. So we had a barbecue here last night. It was awesome. I have never been very good at barbecuing. It's just never been my thing. I didn't grow up barbecuing. I grew up, as I said, in a one-bedroom apartment. And so my grandma cooked. Barbecues, if you think, it's a suburban thing, right? You have a house, you have a backyard, you have a grill, you have money to buy these things, you have the space, you have relationships from work and church. I mean, you think a barbecue is not a big deal, but it really is a social phenomenon. Now, of course, you go to a park, you do it in your backyard, in your garage. I mean, now things have changed, but certainly 30 years ago when I was a young kid, I never grew up with barbecue, so I have no idea to this day what a propane tank is. I mean, these things that you would think, right, I'm 50, that would be natural for me. But again, also, I didn't grow up with my father. I didn't grow up with a mom, so I didn't have these natural examples. And maybe it was also my temperament. I'm more of a creative, so I wasn't even drawn to those things. I was drawn to music and speaking and people. And so last night we had a barbecue and all this amazing meat. And so I've burnt, I don't know how many hot dogs I've burnt in my lifetime, like hundreds. And so I, as the man of the house, I'm expected to be the barbecue man, right? Even my beautiful wife said, you know, she had this picture with this guy barbecue and she's like, oh, that's you, baby. And all along inside, I'm dying because I know I'm not very good at it. I burn things, etc. So I kind of started the whole thing, and at least I know how to turn on the gas and all that stuff. So I know how to do that. And I got the meat on there, but I'm thinking, oh man, I'm going to burn all this stuff, you know, and so people aren't going to be happy, and I'm going to have to just be uncomfortable and laugh and all the usual stuff that I've been through so many times. Always embarrassing, never easy, never comfortable. Well, by the grace of God, my good friend Gary, he came and just was playing, messing around with me and blah, blah. And he said, hey, you don't know what you're doing, do you? And I said, no, I don't. And just because he's so nice, he took over the whole thing. And for the next 30, 40 minutes, I even posted a picture of this on Facebook. It was a masterpiece. And I said, Gary, you're so good at this. He's like, well, I'm not, but I have a friend who really is, and I've learned from him. Long story short, everyone was happy. Now, later in the night, we ran out of meat. And so my beautiful wife, and I feel bad to even right now, she came to me and said, hey, can you barbecue some more meat? And I basically just didn't. And she had to do it. And that was bad. I feel bad even right now saying it. But I know why I didn't do it. And that's because I know I'm not very good. Now, to my credit, I guess, not really, I was connecting with people. I was doing what I love to do, connecting, making other people comfortable, accepting people, loving people, just being the life of the party. But what I didn't like is that I made my poor wife make this meat, you know, and so I tell you this because all of these decisions or all of these, things that you begin to notice about yourself, they have an impact on other people. Me not being comfortable barbecuing, doing something so simple and stupid, I guess. First, people will mock me for it. They will mock us for it. And then second, it puts pressure on, in this case, my wife to do it herself. And even though I know my strengths and I know my giftedness, I know what I'm great at, we all feel this pressure to be something that we're not. Another thing that I'm not a very type A, I'm not a type A person. I've always wanted to be, I've always thought, oh, that would be great to be a type A person, but I'm not. I'm a type B personality. And I'm very happy with it. I'm a people person. I'm a pastor, for goodness sake. But a lot of times in churches, these churches want a type A personality who's going to rally people and fix everything and be mean and tell people what to do and do it with a smile on their face. I have friends that are like that. I have a friend, Ty, my friend, Josh. A lot of leaders are type A personalities, type B personalities. We struggle in terms of leadership because we do things through people, through conversations, through love, through symbols and prayers. And you would think that churches would welcome type B leaders, but it all depends. And so there's always a price to pay. There is this another spiritual leader that I follow online. Her name is Teal Swan. And she talks about how she just doesn't do the normal things really well. She didn't go into detail, but I think she loves cooking, but I think maybe paying her bills or changing a light bulb, you know, things like that. She says she struggles with those things and she's been through trauma in her childhood. We have a very similar story. You know, she didn't have her parents. And so this is not just personality. It's also that trauma for me of not having my mom and dad, especially a father, to teach me how to change the oil, how to drive a van. In fact, I grew up with a father who maybe in some ways was very much like me, even though I didn't have him in my life for too long. But he was also a creative, a people person, an organizer of people. He was an empath. He was a humanitarian. He was a human being, not a human doing. And there are just two different kinds of people in this world. There are the doers. If you're familiar with the Myers-Briggs, there are the S, you know, which is the sensing people. They live in their senses and what they see, what they smell, and they're practical people. My wife is the ultimate S. I am the ultimate F, feeling. I am a thinker, a feeler, a creative, a people person. I love people. I love harmony. I love love. I love music, art, beautiful things, Jesus. Thoughts, writing, you know, I'm in my feelings. And it's not that I don't have sensing gifts, and it's not that if you are more of a practical person, it's not that you don't have feelings, but it's that 80-20 rule. It's what you tend to enjoy the most. And when you're in your feelings, let's say if you're a sensitive, sensing type, how does it make you feel when someone says, what do you think is the future of your family? For someone like me, I love that question. That's all I think about. But for most people, including people in my life, they panic when they're asked that question of, what do you think is the future of your family? Or can you reflect on the last 3 years of your career? It would be like asking me to redo an engine or to balance the budget or to do any of these practical things where you have to be very, very much in think on your feet and in your senses. Now, as I said, everything has a good and a bad. The bad, I've explained it, right? People can be discouraged, disappointed. You might disappoint a lot of people. You might feel a lot of guilt. But at 50, I'm done trying to be things that I'm not. And I guess that's the encouragement that I want to give you is, my guess is that you're doing things that are not really you. And I wonder if it's a life stage thing. Maybe in our 20s, 30s, and 40s, we have to do everything, even though we don't really enjoy them because of expectations. And you have to be a type A to get the job, to keep the job, to lead. But I think the ultimate test is your gozo, right? Are you truly happy? I am not happy when I'm fighting and having to crunch numbers and make tough decisions and be mean and or do like evaluations and all of these linear things. I am at my worst at that. But now you put me with someone and just talk about those very things and do it more in a conversational way. I am a genius. I can give you insights into your quote performance that will rock your world and that will actually help you improve. But expect me to do like a 1 to 10 with three bullet points on how to improve your performance, and I shrivel up and die. You might as well be asking me to cut off my right hand. And this is very typical. I mean, that's why leaders, for the most part, they have very strong administrative types, very strong practical people around them. And in my case, in my home and in my life, I have my wife, who's an incredible practical person. Same thing at work. I have very practical people. The first year that I was at my current church, I had this amazing, amazing person. I don't think I've ever worked with someone so gifted at sensing things, meaning at things in the moment. Not sensing as in intuitive things, but as in the moment, practical things is maybe a better term. Incredible. We did things in a year that I don't think I'll ever do ever in 20 years. She is truly gifted at things that are in the moment, things that are practical. And this was in the church context. So, and now what I do amazingly well is connect. I can make the person who feels the most out of place comfortable. I can envision and implement things that will revolutionize a city, a world, a whole universe. I will provide insights into your marriage, into your thinking that you don't even realize are happening, because that's where I live. So back to the person I follow online, Teal Swan, she was saying that because she can't even change a light bulb, she has people, men, women, employees in her life that do all these things for her. And truly, obviously money always being the problem, plus also, I don't know, just shame. Truly the way forward for me is to, and I've been doing this more and more, is just to hire people to get the possum out or to change the oil or to fix the leaky faucet. And that's what I've done. I've either, you don't have to hire people, but you look for someone else. And instead of me being the superhero and saying, okay, I can do it myself, instead, let's say if my beautiful wife says to me, can you grill this meat? Maybe I can take that from her and say, hey, Gary, can you just do this really quick? And boom, I've used my gifts. I've taken that off of my beautiful wife and I've gotten the job done, but not by me expecting to do it all and to be everything, to be the practical and the feeling and the intuitive and the linear. You know, you can't do it all. You can't be all things to all people. You have to be true to yourself. And the more effective leaders, they don't say no. They say, oh, you know, let me find someone who is gifted at that. Or they might tell the person, you know what, go talk to Gary. He will take care of it in 3 minutes. So maybe that's the other thing I could have told my wife last night. I said, oh yeah, you know what? Maybe I should have said, hey, Gary, can you take care of that? And then told my wife, I already talked to Gary. He'll take care of it. And be the person who connects the dots. And that's another thing that I do extremely well. Not as well as other people do. I'm not as gifted at connecting or at delegating. I tend to be more of a one-man show and inspire a team to follow me. But I am learning and I'm pretty good at connecting A to C. So A, B, and C. I want to be myself because I believe that being myself is a beautiful thing. I'm not perfect. I'm not complete. I need other people around me. I am not a good delegator. I am not the best at connecting people with other people, but I am a hard worker, a dreamer, visionary, implementer, creative, empath, a connector. I would probably say I am the most gifted person that I've known. I know this sounds egotistical, at connecting with people, at making someone feel loved, understood, heard, and truly valued for who they are, not for who they should be, including my wife, including our children. When I go south, when I am under stress, that's when I can be difficult, or I get very panicky or anxious, or I get upset, mostly because I feel so embarrassed and in panic that I really can't do this. And I don't have the guts, I guess, or maybe just the experience of saying, I'm not that person. Can you ask Gary? Because it's embarrassing to say that, right? You have all these expectations upon you. So I wonder if any of this relates to you. You can relate to this. Where are you trying to be something that you're not? With your family, with yourself, with your spouse, with your friends? I admire in the Enneagram the eights. The eights and the sevens seem to me the most honest people. Our daughter Isabella is an eight, and she is just herself. I have a friend who's an eight. He is just amazing. I love eights because they are just honest. You may not like them, but this is who I am. They're not people pleasers. They please themselves, and I think that's a very, very powerful thing. Sevens are the same way. They're in their joy all the time. They're just laughing and could care less about other people. They're just trying to find the next adventure. And so they're like, hey, I'm leaving. And so you can join me if you want, but otherwise, adios, amigo. Those of us who are the fours, the twos, the sixes, I think I might be a three. I'm not really sure, actually. But those of us who are empaths and feelers, we fake it till we make it, and we never make it. We just fake it, we fake it, we fake it. We say, yes, sure, and then we end up with panic attacks or with, I don't know, feeling angry and being pretty bitter at ourselves, mostly because we have been betraying our own trust. It's better that you start saying, that's not me, or can you ask somebody else? Or if it's someone really close to you, your mom, your parents, your wife, or your spouse, you may have to be a little more diplomatic. You may have to learn how to communicate with your spouse and say, love, you know, this is something that I thought I was really good at. You obviously know that I'm not. Here's the plan. I have these three phone numbers of people that you can call, or I can call. I don't think I even mind calling people. It's just mostly the embarrassment that I'm not the hero, that I'm not the superhero to my wife or to my friends that I wish I was. But that's just a bunch of baloney. The best thing we can do to be the superhero to those we love, or to God, I guess, is to be yourself. Do you like to knit? Then knit. Are you more of a doer? Then be a doer. I have my friend Gary, as I said, I am so thankful that he is who he is. Like 3 months ago, my car battery broke down, or I don't know, fell apart, and all the cables were all jacked. You know what? Because I have an engineering background, I could see what to do. And I guess, honestly, in this case, I wasn't afraid to do it. I actually wanted to do it. I called him, I think, more just out of loneliness. I just wanted to be with him. I love this man so much. He's a mentor and a father figure to me. So he came and fixed it for me. We went to the store and blah, 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 and we cracked jokes, and it was just a beautiful experience. So maybe that case isn't the perfect case. Now, well, let me take that back. I am afraid of batteries. I didn't grow up with a father who was a fixer, or even really with a father at all. I'm not very comfortable fixing cars. And so that's probably why, in the back of my mind, because I did try to fix the battery. I did this. I even brought my son, and because, you know, I'm trying to be different to him so he doesn't grow up being so impractical like me. I was showing him kind of what to do, and we got it to work, but I knew that I wasn't doing it right because I knew I had to do more. I had to cut this and that and the other. And I just wasn't comfortable. I was afraid. And fear isn't always a bad thing. Fear is sometimes a good thing. Often it's a good thing. It tells you, you know what, this is not you. Look for someone else. Ask somebody else. Tell the person or the problem, hey, this is not me, but here's maybe a resource. And even if you don't have a resource or an answer, the answer sometimes is no, I can't do this. I don't feel comfortable. The answer is sometimes just be vulnerable and say, I'm afraid. I don't know what to do. I feel afraid. Even if you're 40, 50, 60, even if you're the man of the house. I mean, and I know that maybe that sounds weak to some women, or even as I hear myself talk, but again, I know what I'm amazing at. I can love people so deeply. I can sit with someone for 3 hours and truly listen and be present completely to that person. That's my gift. And that's what I do naturally. And that's what other people can't stand. And yet that's who I am. And so it's an 80-20 thing. We can never be 100% in our gifting. There are things that we have to do that are not us, whether at home or at work or wherever, but you have to be true to the 80%. So what is that thing that you love to do most of all? And what are those things that you just, you say yes to babysitting, to taking care of the kids, to cooking, to cleaning, but you know it's just not you. You're going to fail. Speaking of that, if you're a woman and the husband or society expects you to cook and clean and have babies, and yet you know that your gifts are to be an entrepreneur and to start new businesses or to do accounting or to travel, how do you handle that? Well, now you get my point. As a man that's supposed to fix everything, how do you handle that? Well, at some point, maybe it's a thing of age. You have to say no. You have to say, I don't like to cook, but I can go and buy some amazing meal. Or here's this friend that can cook for us and we can pay her $100 or there's a service. Now, if the husband says, what kind of woman are you? That's where the communication comes in and the understanding comes in. And you stop faking it and you stop lying to yourself or to him about who you are and who you're not. And if he doesn't accept you, then give him time. If he doesn't respect you, then give him time. But what's the point of you cooking and cleaning? First, it's going to stink, right? The food is going to taste horrible and the cleaning is going to be horrible. And so it doesn't make anything better, right? It doesn't fix the problem. And you're going to hate it. And he's going to know that you're not good. So it's just a mess. It's better that you're honest. Even if the solution isn't easy, you don't have money to hire someone, you whatever, right? But it's better that you begin the process of figuring out who you are, what you do. And maybe even, it's not about even who you are, it's what you do and you don't do. When Rochelle and I went to therapy about just our home life and all these things, the therapist said, just think division of labor. What are the things that you will do? What are the things that she will do? Genius. So think of it more as a division of labor. What are the things that you do and don't do? And the things that you don't do, you don't have to have a solution for them. And if they happen, meaning if there's a possum in your garage, then maybe the solution is that God provides this kid who's there at home. And guess what? He loves killing possums or whatever. Or sometimes ignoring it, quote unquote, might be the thing you have to do. Maybe you have to ignore what to you it feels like ignoring the situation, but really it's you're trusting God. Like, there are things sometimes that I just have to ignore because I don't have a solution. And all I can honestly say to myself or to Rochelle or to people around me is, I'm not sure. Let's just wait and see. I had a pastor leader friend of mine who was a genius at this. And I criticized his technique because probably insecurity, but he would often say, you know, we'll wait and see. We'll see what happens. In some ways, he knew himself and he had seen God work enough times through that technique that was his pet answer. Not to everything. He was a genius at many things. Going back to the same thing, there are amazing things that we all do well. There are things that we all do amazingly well. But when it came to decisions, in his case, he would say, we'll wait and see. And, you know, sometimes that put a little pressure on me to decide. And I learned, I grew as a leader. Sometimes maybe a third person would say, hey, okay, no one's doing anything. I'll step in. And I think that's where this becomes generous and positive and abundant. It's not just up to you and the other person. Perhaps there's a third party, the Holy Spirit, fate, as people call it, someone else that might be ready to help. I guess at the end of the day, my prayer for you today is that you will be you and stop trying to be everything to everyone. Stop trying to be the superhero on things that you're not meant to be doing. And be the superhero in the areas that you are gifted in, that you are called to be. Like that book says, what are your strengths? Strengths finders. What is your strength? Focus on your strengths 99% of the time. And your weaknesses, the things you don't do well, trust God for them. Wait and see. See what God does. Give room for the Holy Spirit to work. I hope that this episode can give encouragement and guidance to someone out there. Make sure that you like, comment, subscribe, and I will see you next time.
Thank you for listening to The David Trigg Show. Find the complete archive at davidtrigg.com or subscribe for free through the podcast app on iTunes or Stitcher on Android.
Each week, we bring you a message of joy, success, and personal power in spite of fear, anxiety, and depression. Because as we like to say, though there's pain in the night, gozo comes in the morning.